you and my fellow Dhamma brothers and sisters, as well as those guests from Vijay and Supan. Thank you for coming down here to share your Dhamma knowledge with us. Thank you. Tonight's topic, as you have seen on the corner, is understanding samsara and the importance of mindfulness in crossing over to the other shore. We understand that the samsara, generally as we understand it, means the rounds of birth and rebirth, death and repeated birth and death. But to get out of samsara, the key practice is mindfulness, and through mindfulness we understand both our physical and mental processes and understand the teaching of the Buddha as regards non-self and the upliftment of our defilements. So tonight, Brother Teo will share with us on how important this practice of mindfulness is and how we should cultivate to make it part of our daily life. So without taking much time, I think we shall commence by taking refuge, okay, and observe the precepts.
Okay. Together we will take refuge, then we pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata viramani sikapadang samadhiyami, Adinadana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami, Kamesu michachara viramani sikapadang samadhiyami, Musavada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami, Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami, Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you. relax yourself, body and mind, then maintain some more attention, then we can start. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the beginning of our Chinese New Year, which has just ended recently. So this year, 2016, I think, if I'm not wrong, this is my second talk in Klang for the year. Today's topic is quite interesting. As you can see on the whiteboard, you have to understand samsara. And samsara is a Pali word. It means the eternal, perpetual cycles of birth and death of living beings. So many religions also have this concept of samsara. Some they call it the perpetual wheel of birth and death. Then under the Buddha's teaching, we also have this term samsara. And most religion explain that if you want to liberate from samsara, you have to develop the training of the mind. You have to meditate until you become enlightened. When you realize the truth, understand the realities of life and existence, then only you can liberate from samsara. Then there is another part to today's talk. Apart from understanding samsara, I think Brother Gan has added the second part, which is more important, is it? You also have to understand the importance of developing mindfulness so that you can develop the meditation to realize the enlightenment, thereby enabling you to reach the other shore. The other shore is not just the opposite shore, where under our conditioned world, if you were to look at the sea or the river, there are two shores. So from this shore, you want to cross over to the other shore. That one is not enlightenment. That one you can either take a ferry, or if you are more adventurous, you can swim across. But here, the analogy is different. We are talking about the unconditioned. Means when you cross the sea of samsara, means this perpetual cycle of birth and death. You liberate your mind. No more rebirth. When there is no more rebirth, there is no more suffering. All of the condition will problem will cease to be. So samsara is a very interesting concept that we may need to develop the clear understanding. We can draw it this way. Let's say this one is the other shore. The other shore. Or we call it the unconditioned. When your mind transcends itself, cease, and realize the unconditioned, this is what the Buddhists call Nibbana. The realization of Nibbana is the enlightenment. And when you realize that, you will understand what is the unconditioned. So this is liberation. Liberation. Whereas this side, this is what they call samsara. Perpetual cycle of birth and death. So samsara is the world we are living in. We call this the existential world or the conditioned world, which is the opposite of the unconditioned. So this is the existential world or the conditioned world. And according to the Buddha, living beings can take birth in samsara within any of the 31 planes of existence. So there are 31 planes of existence. So this is to give you an idea of what samsara is all about. And within the 31 planes, the Buddha subdivided them into 3 categories of existence. The first one is a sensual realm, he called it Kamaloka, which consists of the Deva realms, the human realm, and the 4 willful states. 4 plus the human realm, 5, plus the Deva realm, 6. That's why in Mahayana you heard of this Liu Tao Lun Hui. You will take birth within the 6th realm. The Mahayana's Deva realm include the form realm and the formless realm, which is the Brahma realm and the Arupa formless realm. So under Theravada's teaching, the form realm got 16 Brahma realm, followed by the 4 formless realm. So 16 plus 4, you have 20. Then 20, you add in the 6 Deva realm, 26. Then you add in the human realm, 27, plus the 4 willful realm, 31. That's how the 31 planes of existence comes to be. Then this existential or the conditioned world, the perpetual cycle of birth and death, this one follows a very powerful nature's law. The Buddha came to realize that there is such a thing as the law of karma. It is the law of karma that conditions repeated birth through ignorance, through delusion, especially self-delusion, sakkayaditti. So this law of karma is a very powerful spiritual law. This one is a spiritual law. If you fail to understand this law that governs all of life and existence, that governs all of the repeated birth and death that arise within samsara, then you will not understand life. You will get yourself entangled with life. So the basis of today's talk is to understand this law of karma. That's why the Buddha said you have to cultivate mindfulness so that you can develop the clear understanding of life, so that you can meditate, train your mind to develop the insight knowledge or wisdom via the direct seeing. Without mindfulness, whatever you do is all thought-based energy field. It can never liberate the mind. Just like the 2 teachers that initially taught Sakyamuni, Ulara and Udaka and Alara, sorry. Both are very skillful practitioner in the field of energy, jhanas. They can realize the form and the formless realm, even while in the human realm, because they meditate and their mind can transcend the sensual realm. They can reach the four jhanas where they experience the form realm. Then when you pass away, maintaining all this mind state, because when the body starts to degenerate, when the craving force starts to cease, then that mind will actually, the consciousness will release from this physical body, then it will come together. And because they have cultivated this jhana before, they very easily enter jhana during those moments after death. And because of that, there is condition for them to take birth up there. So the form realm, where the 16 stages of birth for Brahmas, they are the one that has this first jhana, second, third, and fourth jhana. These are called Rupa jhana, means the form jhana within the form world, within the existence of form. In Mahayana, they call Si Chan. Then the other four are the Arupa jhanas, means the formless realm. Within the formless realm, they will take birth up there. The Buddha was not satisfied with that type of existence. He knew after his passing away, he can take birth up there. But through his past cultivation, he realized that realm is still within the 31 plane of existence, still within samsara. You have not realized the unconditioned. This is the one you have to pay attention to. The unconditioned. You cannot realize the unconditioned, then you are still bound within the 31 plane. That's why he knew he has not transcend life. He has not solved his problem of getting old, getting sick, and die. It's only after he continued to develop the training until when he met up with Sujata, who offered the milk rice. Then recollecting what happened when he was young as a boy, the harvesting festival, where he didn't go deep into concentration, where he was only in the first jhana mind state. The first jhana mind state is not an absorption jhana. It's just upachara samadhi. It's not apana samadhi. Because the jhanic factors, all the five jhanic factors, they are still there. These five jhanic factors, because they have not gone into apana samadhi, when he went into that state again, he realized the mind is very light, very free, and is still a free mind. That's why he silenced his mind. Then he realized this is the mind that can develop understanding, insight, and all those things. And because of his past cultivation, perfection, when he started to revert back to normal food, because he knew the physical body needs food, he realized what he called the middle path. Middle path is avoiding the two extremes. The first extreme is, you heard before, what is the first extreme? Indulgent in what? Sensual desire. That is the first extreme. So, if you indulge in the sense experience, then you will get trapped. Then the other extreme is self-mortification, torturing yourself, subject yourself to severe suffering, with the wrong understanding that when you do this, you can actually exhaust your negative karma. You can endure and finish off your suffering faster, thinking that when suffering no more, no more karmic condition to suffer anymore, then you can become enlightened. That is wrong view. So because of that, the Buddha realized the middle path. He said, you cannot be deluded. You have to strike a balance. Body and mind must harmonize and support each other to develop this cultivation. So that's why he realized this middle path and he decided to follow this middle path. And when his mind state is in the first jhana, when he recalled the younger days, when he was just a kid, and he can just meditate and levitate and saw the harvesting festival, and he was fully conscious, fully aware, free mind, so beautiful. Then he used that mind to develop understanding, meditate. And because of his past cultivation, his parami, that night under the Bodhi tree, condition become favorable. Then he went through all the various stages of insight, knowledges. Then he realized the law of dependent origination. And he also witnessed how the law of karma work, how living beings transmigrate from one life to the next life through rebirth. This part is very important. According to the Buddha, he said, there is no such thing as reincarnation. He said everything is dependent originating. So let's say each of this mark that I mark on this samsara line is one segment of your birth and death. So let's say this one is the first one, second, third, fourth, until infinity. Each and every of this birth and death, every segment of rebirth that you take, according to the Buddha, these are all conditioned by this law of karma. Then he said there is no such thing as reincarnation. You know what is reincarnation? This one, they believe in a soul, a permanent soul that reincarnate, means this soul transmigrate from one life to the next life. The Buddha said no, there is no such thing. But there is rebirth according to this law of karma. That's why this law of karma conditioned rebirth. So your last thought moment, which is the death consciousness, the Buddha said there is no soul. At the moment of death, let's say this is a human being. This is a consciousness that is trapped inside. This is the physical body. Then this is the mind or the consciousness that is trapped inside. Upon death, the Buddha said, there is what they call death consciousness, the last thought moment. Last thought moment. In Pali, they have a name. They call it Chuti Citta. You know why chuti or not? Go for holiday. So chuti citta is your last thought moment. After that, you're supposed to die. Then the Buddha said, immediately it will condition rebirth consciousness. This one is just a single consciousness, rebirth consciousness. But all the DNA, the whatever conditioning from your karmic nature, they are all encoded. And this one, depending on law karma, it will be conditioned into the next birth. So which form of mind you take during the segmental birth depends on karma, karma design. And because of that, the initial consciousness that went in is just a single rebirth consciousness. That's why you see a baby when it is born, it has got no what they call sophisticated memory or thought. The brain is like new brain. And that consciousness, over time, through the conditioning and all those things, that fetus become a baby, then the baby learn to understand things, learn to observe things, learn to see things, learn to cognize things, perceive things. Then you teach them how to verbalize, then the word, the concept, all this come about. Then the thought process. Then slowly it evolves and become more and more sophisticated. Then after you have lived life very long, this consciousness become very complex. This is what they call your conditioned mind. All of your accumulated experiences, your fear, your phobia, your views, your opinion, your accumulated tendencies, everything is inside that consciousness. So this one actually molds you. That's why you cling on to this and grasp onto this, believing that this is what you are, the whole entity. And this is the cause of delusion, self-delusion, scarcity. And this is the one that is subject to the law of karma. So this one, the form and mind, they are subject to the law of karma. So the Buddha said, when he said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. You are what you are because of your karma. The five daily contemplation, the last one. You know who is the Buddha referring to or not? Who is the Buddha referring to when he said you, each and every one of you, are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are every moment, every instant because of your karma. He's referring to who? Huh? Yeah, all of you, but which part of you? That segmented form of mind means this form of mind, so-called human being. Understand that? This one is subject to the law of karma. But this one is not you, the Buddha said. Understand that? This one is karmically conditional. Karmically conditioned into this world. For you to come to this world, for you to live life, understand life, develop the cultivation, but if you don't have the understanding and the wisdom, if you continue to be deluded, you will suffer. You will come here and pay back your karma. This understanding is very important. So when you know that this form of mind, which is the human being, even though it's not you, but this is the one that is connected to your karmic nature. There is a karmic nature. And this karmic nature, the moment you are born, this before my mind is born, you straight away inherit. That's why you are born of it, had the condition and supported by it. And you are what you are because of it. So if you understand this, this law of karma is so powerful, the Buddha said. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You reap what you sow. You plant the condition of good karma, the good seed, you will reap the fruit of good seed or good karma. That's a zhong yin jie guo in the Mahayana teaching. Zhong san yin jie san guo. You plant the seed of virtue, goodness, you will reap the fruit of virtue and goodness. That's what the law of karma is about. Then zhong er yin jie er guo. You plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. When you understand that your life is subject to this law, because we are born of it, had to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are each moment, every instant, because of this law of karma, what must you do? You have to take care of karma. Otherwise, your life will become miserable. You will suffer. You will fall. Then how do you take care of karma? You have to train your mind, the Buddha said, to develop mindfulness, heedfulness. Otherwise, you cannot deal with karma, because karma is about moral causation, mental intention. That's why the Buddha said, it is chitena, or mental intention, that he called karma. That's why it's called moral causation. Without the moral mental intention behind each and every action, speech and thought process, there is no karma. That's why this mental intention is very important. And mind moves so fast. Mental intention arises and passes away so fast. Without mindfulness, you cannot deal with life. You cannot take care of karma. That's why mindfulness is very, very important. So this part clear, clear. And then we can go on. When you start to understand this, then you ask yourself, what was the teaching all about? What did the Buddha teach? What are the essence of his teaching? Yeah? The essence of the Buddha's teaching is what? The Four Noble Truths. Yes, that is the essence of his teaching. Then what is his advice to living beings? All Buddhas, when they come, they give the same advice. What is it? Dhammapada verse? Dhammapada verse? The advice of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse what? The monk every time chant. Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyota padang etang buddhana sasana. Which verse is it? 183. This one is the most important verse, because this is the advice of all Buddhas when they arise. Why do they give us this advice? What is sabba papasa akaranang? Sabba is all. Papasa is evil. That's why he specifically advises you. You have to avoid all evil. Not only avoid evil. Avoid evil is not enough. He emphasized all evil is to be avoided. That's why sabba papasa akaranam. You must avoid all evil. Then kusalesa. What is kusala? Kusala. Kusala is wholesomeness. Yeah. All of your wholesomeness. Wholesome action. Wholesome speech. And wholesome thought process. That's why the Buddha said, kusalesa upasambadan. Wherever there is condition to do all this wholesomeness, you must do, you must perform, you must cultivate them. That's why avoid all evil, do good. Develop wholesomeness. Then the last one is sacitta pariyotapanam. What is citta? Mind. purify your mind. After you avoid all evil doers, you take care of karma, but you still not free from suffering yet, because you can have good karma. You can avoid all the negativity of karma, but then you can still become afflicted, miserable, because when your body gets old, gets sick, and about to die, you still have fear. When you cannot get what you want, when there is separation from your loved one, without wisdom, you still have suffering, affliction, the Buddha said. That's why you must develop wisdom. We are purifying your mind. To realize the non-self nature, to realize the universal characteristics of all phenomena, both physical, mental, and nature's phenomena. It's only when you can understand the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering nature, then the non-self or empty nature, then only you can liberate your mind. Only then you can come to understand that this human being, so-called human being, is not you. That's why anatta, non-self. And this is condition arising. Dependent on condition, it arises. When condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. So whatever that arises dependent on condition is a state of flux. That's why it's impermanent. It changes according to the condition. When condition change, it changes. When condition arises, it arises. Come into existence already. When the supporting condition continue to support it, then it exists. When supporting condition cease to be, then you say die or disappear or cease to be. If you cannot penetrate this universal characteristics of impermanent, we are the penetrative direct seeing. You cannot understand life. You cannot understand the non-self nature. Then if you don't have that wisdom, you will cling and grasp to the form and mind. That's why you cannot free. So this understanding is very important. Avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. And this come about because of this right view with regards to the law of karma, the Buddha said. Because you are born of karma. Hey to it. Whatever karmic that you create through your karmic nature, you are born of it, hey to it, conditioned and supported by it. And every moment, every instant, you are what you are because of it. So this law of karma is so powerful. If you don't avoid evil to take care of karma, do good to develop the good karma, then your life will become miserable. Then you will get yourself entangled. That's why with this understanding, you will automatically follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good. Then why do you purify the mind? Because you have to develop wisdom so that you are not deluded, so that you don't get yourself entangled and become miserable over your lack of understanding. So that's why the advice of all Buddha is the same. Dhammapada verse 183, avoid all evil, do good, purify your mind. Then when it comes to the teaching, how do you avoid all evil? What is the Buddha's advice? What constitutes evil? You have to develop the understanding. Every day, when you renew your precept via your puja, why do you do that? Why do you renew your precepts? Huh? Why do you renew your precept? Or why do you take your 5 precepts? Huh? Why? Why do you take your 5 precepts? Why every day you go and renew? Panatipata viravani sikha padam samadhiyami. What are the meaning behind? What are the significance behind? Why did the Buddha say you must keep your precept, renew your precept? Huh? Purify the mind is the last one, the third advice. The first one is what? Avoid evil. How do you avoid evil? Keep your precept. Why keep your precept? Because precept leads to evil. Understand? That's why I ask you to go back and reflect and contemplate on the five precepts. You have to question the Buddha. Why does he say under the first precept, he undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings? That's why panatipata viramani sikapadang samadhi yami. This one, viramani sikapadang samadhi yami, is always repeated. This one, the meaning is, I undertake the training rule to abstain from whatever precept. First one is killing and causing harm to fellow living being. Why do you do that? Why must you keep that precept, the Buddha said? Then you have to inquire. What type of people kill and harm? Who kill and who harm? Does it lead to evil? This action, is it evil? When you cause to kill and harm, you cause suffering, correct or not? Correct or not? Is that evil? Then what did the Buddha teach under the essential Dhamma? What constitute evil? What constitute evil? The three evil roots. What are the three evil roots? Greed, hatred, and delusion. What are the people that kill and harm? Do they have this evil root in them? If you are selfish, you will kill, you will harm, understand? If you are violent, angry, with a lot of jealousy and hatred, you will also kill or cause harm to fellow living beings. And when you are deluded, you will also do that, kill and harm. That's why only people with evil roots, and this evil root will make you evil, because they are the root of all evil. So when you have greed, hatred, and delusion, you become evil. That's why you violate the precept. Each and every of the precepts, you go back and check, they all have the evil roots. Delusion is definitely there. Even the second precept. I undertake the training rule to abstain from taking things that are not yours. Means taking things that don't belong to you. Who will do that? Selfish people, greedy people, correct or not? Deluded people. Heedless people. So these are evil people. That's why when you do that, you cause suffering. It leads to negative karma. It brings about downfall. Then when the condition comes, when the fruition of it arises, you reap what you sow, you become the victim. People will kill you, harm you, cheat you, deceive you. And do all those things that you did to people. That's why this law of karma is very powerful. When you understand the great significance of this law, you will not violate. That's why you will obey the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. When we say we undertake the training rule to abstain from doing all this, you are actually cultivating mindfulness. Understand? That itself is the cultivation. That itself is the beginning of cultivation. How can you develop that training to keep that precept, to observe that precept? That's why you undertake the training rule not to violate this precept. Means what? You have to be ever mindful of your thought process, your mental intention behind everything you do. Because your mental intention is based on your views and opinion of things. If you don't have right view with regards to this law of karma, you will become heedless. You dare to simply do things because you don't believe the law of karma. You will cheat, you will kill, you will harm just to have immediate benefit. But when you understand this nature's law, it's never worthwhile to violate. You will never do. That's why it becomes different. Then you become very watchful, very mindful of your mental intention. Any instant of greed, craving, lustfulness, possessiveness, envy, jealousy, anger, hatred, fear, worry, anxiety. These are all the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then you realize when these mind states are in you, you become evil. You will violate the precept. You will break the precept. Then karmically you will fall and you will suffer. That's why when you have this understanding, you will train your mind to be ever mindful, ever heedful, to see your mental intention. Any of the slightest wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, when you see your three evil roots, you will straight away arise a right effort to abandon them. Whatever that has arisen, the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, you determine through your right effort to abandon them. That's how you cultivate. Then later on when you are skillful, you arise a right effort to prevent all this wrong thought, wrong speech and wrong action from arising. This is what the cultivation is all about. That's why mindfulness is important. You can't even see your mental intention. You don't even know what constitutes evil. The essential Dhamma of what constitutes evil, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are very important. If you don't even know what they are, how can you be mindful of them? That's why all this need understanding and training. Then not only the first two right effort to abandon whatever wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has arisen, you also have to develop the right effort to prevent them from arising. Means the next time, because you understand all this already, you have developed the ability to abandon them through the five ways that the Buddha taught us. The five ways you can recall that. Otherwise, you go ahead and read the Hatsutta note. First, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought to overcome that wrong thought or wrong speech and wrong action. Then secondly is to reflect and contemplate on the danger, the consequence of holding on to this wrong thought or these evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. They will make you evil because these are evil roots, root of all evil. You will suffer. Karmically, you will suffer. It will cause you negative karma, cause your downfall in life. So all this will wake you up. Then you determine not to allow it to stay there. That's why you determine to abandon them, to root them out. Then the third way is when they have already arisen, like your anger, your hatred, your fear, your worry, your anxiety. It's the meditative way. The Buddha said, just relax your mind, silence everything. All this mind state that arise because of your delusion, because you don't have right view, your mind stir and condition it to arise. That's why anger is never you, fear is never you. All of the negative mind state, the three evil roots, the five hindrances, they are never you. They are conditioned arising state because of your heedlessness, your delusion. And they arise because of condition. Wrong view, wrong understanding. So when you start to develop all this, you will start to have very different understanding and you will not do all those things that cause your karmic negativity and downfall. You will change over to a new way of living. You will develop more and more mindfulness, heedfulness to see clearly your mental intention, root them out so that you will not fall into all this karmic negativity again, so that you can heed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Then the second advice is to cultivate wholesomeness, goodness. And this one also very important. You must also arise the right effort to cultivate all of the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that you have yet to develop. That's why you have to cultivate the understanding of the essential Dhamma. What constitutes right thought? What constitutes right speech, right action, and right livelihood? Then how to develop the ability to cultivate them? All of your virtue, they are right thought. All of your goodness, gentleness, pleasantness, kindness, contentment, respect, sincerity, generosity, honesty, these are all right thought. Absence of the three evil roots are greed, hatred, and delusion. So when you develop all this understanding, you will start to understand the cultivation. That's why you will arise the right effort to cultivate the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. And this is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. Arising the appropriate right effort to develop the understanding of right thought. Right thought comes from right view. The three important spiritual laws, right view in regards to the law of karma. That's why from there it starts. Leading to the advice of the Buddha, then keeping of precept, then now cultivation of virtue, wholesomeness. Then you have to understand what constitutes wrong thought. If you don't know what is wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, you cannot cultivate. It's only after you have understood what constitutes wrong thought, then only you can root them out, understand not? The best way to understand wrong thought is what? What are wrong thought? Huh? What are wrong thought? Every day you arise so much thought, isn't it? Most of the time, what type of thought are they? Huh? Oh, you have a lot of this evil root there, negativity, your anger, your hatred, your dislike, your jealousy, your fear, your worry, anxiety. You realize seldom you have right thought. Actually, the best way to understand wrong thought is what? Whenever you are not peaceful, not happy, you have wrong thought. The evil roots are there. So what are wrong thought? Thought that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion that make you evil. These are all wrong thought. Your selfish thought, your emotional angry thought, your envy, your jealousy, all these things that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, all these are wrong thought. So whatever thought that condition your selfishness, your lustfulness, your greediness, your emotional negativity, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow and your lamentation, all these are wrong thought. So very easy to recognize wrong thought, isn't it? That's why throughout the day you check, are you happy, are you peaceful? Whenever you are not happy, not peaceful, the wrong thought is there, then trace, then abandon them. And all these wrong thoughts you have to learn through the first turning and the second turning, contemplative wisdom, the essential Dhamma, what constitutes wrong thought. Why the Buddha say greed, hatred, and delusion? Greed, the meaning is very, very deep. Not only greediness is greed, etc. All of your lust is also greed. All of your possessiveness is also greed. All of your selfishness is also greed. All of your craving, desire, wanting things your way is all greed. We are selfish. Advantage to you or not. All these are greedy thought, selfish thought, possessive thought. You want to own them. You cling on to them. You hold on to them. That's why greed, the meaning is very deep. Then even anger, hatred, the evil root, the meaning is very deep. All your dislike is also the evil root of anger and hatred. All your envy, jealousy, snobbishness, deceitfulness, all this, they are part of the evil roots of greed and hatred. Yeah. Then whatever mind state that bring about sadness, sorrow and lamentation, These are all wrong thought, born of delusion, that bring forth the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow and the lamentation. All these are wrong thought. And when you understand what constitutes wrong thought, you can do something to it. You can abandon it. Then you can later on arise the right effort to prevent them from arising. Then you switch over from a heedless way of living where all this wrong thought leads to evil roots, lead to negative karma. Now you start to develop the opposite wholesome thought. What are the opposite wholesome thought? They are non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And what are they? All of your virtue, your kindness, your goodness, your gentleness, your pleasantness, they are all right thought, wholesome thought. That's why thought of generosity, honesty, contentment, sincerity, gratitude, respect for people, your love, your compassion, when you rejoice, the sympathetic joy, all these are right thought. Then your pleasantness, your kindness, your gentleness, your caring nature, all these are right thought. Then when you can help people, be of service to community, society and people, be a blessing to all, these are all right thought, right speech, right action. So if you can cultivate more and more of this, speak to people courteously, nicely, gently, pleasantly, speech that can bring about love, understanding and harmony instead of the harsh speech, wrong speech that bring about misunderstanding, argument, anger, hatred, backbiting. All this, you have to root them out, abandon them. Then you cultivate the opposite right thought and right speech. That's why kind, gentle and pleasant speeches that bring about harmony, love, understanding. All these are right thought, right speech. That's why when you start to develop more and more of this understanding, your life becomes different. And all this need mindfulness. You need to be ever mindful. Whatever you want to arise, you have to be ever mindful of your mental intention behind everything you do. Are you sincere? Are you honest? Are you truthful? Or are you still cunning, deceitful, selfish? You have to see them all. Without mindfulness, you cannot cope. You cannot deal. That's why it's not easy. Okay? So, coming back to this law of karma, we have developed the three right efforts. First right effort is to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood that has arisen. Then, prevent them from arising when you have the skill and understanding. Before they arise, you can stop them. Because you know this lead to evil, you will just abandon them. They can't even arise. Then after that, you cultivate the opposite wholesome thought. That's a right effort to constantly purify your right thought, right speech, right action, and the way you live your life, following right view, Noble Eightfold Path. Then you become beautiful. Then the last right effort is to refine upon and perfect all this virtue that you have developed, the right thought, right speech, and right action, and right livelihood that you have developed. So that is already a very major practice or cultivation via mindfulness, via heedfulness, so that you can develop the transformation from a heedless way of living to a heedful way of living via avoiding all evil to good. And then the last part is meditation. Purify the mind so that you can become enlightened, to realize the unconditioned, to cross over to the other shore. Now I will spend time on that. So to do that, you need to develop the right mindfulness path factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha said you have to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. And to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, you have to start with sati. The first factor of enlightenment, sati, which is mindfulness. And sati can be developed to puja, to the daily devotional practice, the five daily contemplation, you have to reflect, contemplate. Because this five daily contemplation will help you to develop the understanding to counter the First Noble Truth reality. The first three is regarding this physical body. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So that part, you develop the contemplative wisdom, first turning and second turning. So that you understand that this physical body is not you, become made of element, no knowing. And this one go the way of nature, that's why you don't attach, you don't cling. When you deludedly grasp, cling, attach, believe this is you, you will suffer. Where you will worry about you getting old, getting sick and dying. But when you understand that these are only elements, not you, then it's beautiful. You can use it to live life. Make use of it while it can still serve you well. But when it goes the way of nature, get old, get sick and die, you don't go and lament over it, develop the fear over it. You can accept this reality. Then you accord and flow and do what you have to do. Because this is the reality. Not only you going through all age, sickness and death, all living beings. This is a universal problem. That's why I call it the realities of life and existence. Then the fourth daily contemplation is also very important, the Buddha said. Everything that you think you own, your loved one, your prized possession, your wealth, your property, your career, your status, or whatever, even your antique, your car, and all those things, they are all condition arising phenomena. They don't belong to you. Even your own fire or form of mind, the so-called human body, is condition arising, not you. Then how can this one, which is condition arising, impermanent, own anything? There is also condition arising. That's why there is this constant contemplation to develop the wisdom that whatever which you believe you own, your loved one and all those things, when conditions cease to be, they will separate from you. Even when condition is still there, when your breath stops, they will also separate from you because your identity is erased. That's why the Buddha has this famous saying, is it? My son, my wealth, my property, all those that I hold on to dearly. He said, this only the fools, the foolish lament, for that very body also he cannot own, wherein son, wherein wealth, and wherein all those things. That's why those who have wisdom inside, they will not be deluded. While you have the condition to have them, use them for the good of the many, to help yourself, your loved one, society, fellow living being. Do not be so deluded as to be selfish, stingy, miser, be a miser, cling hold. Then when the time comes, when the breath stops, you can't bring along anything. You came empty, you leave empty. But the Mandarin way of describing is good. La ye kong, qi ye kong. Na ma si zu, he bi ku ku, wei kong, liu lei. You understand the meaning. He said, when you are born into this world, you came empty-handed. That's why la ye kong. Then when you die, what happened? You also cannot bring along anything. They cremate you. That's why you go empty too. Then, in between, why do you so deludedly grieve over emptiness? Fighting for this, fighting for that, possessiveness, trying to own this, trying to own that, trying to make so much money at the expense of your health. Then use all this money to chase back your health. By then, too late, regret. You should enjoy life. By the time you realize that, your physical body cannot carry you anymore. So all these are living beings' problem. Then the last one is, of course, the The fifth daily contemplation is about the law of karma. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. And this one refers to the former mind, which is not you. So when you have this understanding, you are not deluded. The Buddha said, that's why you can penetrate the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, or empty nature. Then when you don't deludedly grasp and cling to this fire grip for my mind, then your mind can liberate. That's why you have to meditate on this fire grip or for my mind. This is what the mindfulness path factor is about, the four foundation of mindfulness. You have to anchor your mind to this four foundation, which is found within your for my mind. That's why the Buddha said, within this phantom length body, along with perception, thought and mindfulness, I proclaim the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that leads to the cessation. Means the Four Noble Truths can be realized through this form of mind. The reason being, the first foundation of mindfulness, Kaya Nupassana, mindfulness of the Kaya, the physical form and the mental form, they are within this form of mind. You have this Kaya. Then feeling is the second foundation. Vedana Nupassana, mindfulness of feeling, again is within this form of mind. Then the third one is Chitta Nupassana, mindfulness of content of consciousness, the five mental aggregates of form of mind, which is again within this form of mind. Then the last part is Dhamma, mindfulness of Dhamma, truth, the teaching. You can also realize them within the form of mind. And finally, the last category of practice, mindfulness of Dhamma, is mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths, which is what the teaching is all about, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, which proclaim to you clearly the First Noble Truth of suffering, means the reality of life and existence, that suffering is prevalent. When you don't have the understanding and the wisdom, suffering will be there. That's why it's a universal characteristic. Dukkha. So this noble truth is to be understood, the Buddha said. Then the second noble truth explained to you the cause behind suffering. All of this suffering that arise under the first noble truth reality, the A condition, the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. And the main cause is your self-delusion, sakayaditi, the condition you to grasp, cling and hold. That's why he said craving, grasping, clinging is the cause of suffering. Clinging to what? The five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that it's you. Then the third noble truth is the most beautiful, the Buddha said. Suffering need not be when you can develop the understanding or the wisdom to liberate your mind. Then you can realize the enlightenment, which is Nibbana in the here and the now. Then you cross over. And that one is the most reassuring. That's why this third noble truth, the realization of Nibbana, can be realized in the here and the now. You don't have to wait till death. And this is most reassuring. Then he didn't end there. He said, there is a fourth noble truth, which he called the Noble Eightfold Path. He said, this is the meditation. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, this is a noble truth. It will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is the real meditation. And within the Noble Eightfold Path, you have the four foundations of mindfulness, which is described under the seven path factor, Samma Sati, right, mindfulness. So this mindfulness is very important. Without mindfulness, you cannot start. You cannot even cultivate the first advice of the Buddha to avoid evil, to purify the mind. Then to cultivate wholesomeness, also same. You have to have mindfulness. Then without mindfulness, you cannot investigate the Dhamma. The second enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya, cannot arise. Then without mindfulness, you cannot be mindful, you cannot be heedful. And according to the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 21, if you are not able to be mindful, you are as if dead. The Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. But the moment you cultivate this mindfulness and make it ever mindful, leading to heedfulness, the Buddha said you are destined for enlightenment. That's why he said under Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you are heedless, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually, you are like dead. You don't stand a chance. That's the reason why mindfulness is so important. And without heedfulness, you cannot cultivate. Then after that, without heedfulness, you cannot develop the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. You cannot insight into phenomena. You cannot develop samadhi. Without sati and samadhi, you cannot see things as they are. Wisdom cannot arise. The last spiritual faculty cannot arise. Then you cannot awaken. That's why the whole cultivation depends heavily on sati, mindfulness. And the most important cultivation is the daily mindfulness, sati sampajana. Mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. You cannot be mindful in the midst of life. You cannot develop this meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because heedfulness is to be ever mindful to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is Noble Eightfold Path. And Noble Eightfold Path, all of the eight path factors are related to life. That's why life itself is the meditation. Life itself is where the Noble Eightfold Path can be cultivated. If you go and sit, thinking that in and out of retreat can make you enlightened, you go and try. If you are heedless, the moment you come out of retreat, return to daily life. In the midst of life, you can't even maintain 5 to 10 seconds of mindfulness. Forget about becoming enlightened. Because this mindfulness has to be very stable. That's why heedfulness is the word the Buddha uses, ever mindful and constantly meditative. Means this cultivation of daily mindfulness is a full-time job. You have to be ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why Dhammapada verse 23 defines what heedfulness is. The constantly meditative and ever mindful. And if you are steadfastly holding on to this practice, you will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana, guaranteed 100%. And to do that, you have to start with mindfulness. Stabilize it until it becomes ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path in the midst of life. To be ever mindful of your mental intention. To constantly reflect, contemplate, and develop the right view. Then apply it into daily life. To use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. From right view, you arise the right thought. Right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then the four right effort constantly purify your thought process. Train your mind to be ever mindful. Develop the four foundation of mindfulness so that your daily mindfulness become very stable. So that you can awaken and realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. And then you can cross over to the other shore. Okay? So this is what I want to share with you all tonight. I hope it benefits you. I will end the talk now. Thank you so much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So in the meantime, you got any question, you can still ask. We still got 10 to 15 minutes. Now it's only 9:50. This one a bit fast. Okay, while I have a drink. Anybody got any question? Yeah, Richard, yes.
Right. The Tibetan practices this, they don't say rebirth, is it?
Reincarnation.
Reincarnation.
Okay.
What is the understanding of
that? Okay, good. Since now I have time. Earlier on I thought I don't have time, that's why I didn't explain that part. Now we come back to this so-called human being. Huh? You say this word reincarnation, believe in the permanent soul that transmigrate from one life to another life. Understand not? Means this one, they say, is responsible for who you are. It's a permanent, unchanging entity they call a soul that transmigrate from one birth to another birth. And this is what the Christian believe in too. That's why Christianity believe in one life, no rebirth. You are only given one chance, they said. God create, you come. Then that same God, which is almighty, got a very funny way of judging you. He said, if you believe me, if you believe God, what happened when you die? Huh? He promised you eternal heaven. Oh, wow, very interesting religion. Huh? Straight away, eternal heaven. The kingdom of God. But if you don't believe him, what happened? Huh? Straight away, down to hell. Eternal hell. Then they got a lot of funny other understanding too. They say everything is God's creation. Then Genesis, they say, let there be light, there is light. You believe or not? Day and night, you need God to create or not? You need sunlight. Do you need God to create sunlight? And they believe that there is such a thing. But we don't want to comment because I just want to show you the different type of religion. We respect them for what they are because they have their own belief system. But because their understanding is different to them, this is reasonable to them. But to me, a scientific mind, I find it very difficult to accept because let's say you are very virtuous. You do a lot of goodness, wholesomeness. You happen not to be a Christian. Then eternal hell, straight away, after that death. Whereas if you are very evil, you do a lot of havoc, last minute baptized, believe in God, eternal heaven, rewarded. Got such nature's law. No? I find it very difficult to understand. Anyway, the Tibetan, they believe there is a reincarnation, means there is a permanent unchanging soul. But I'm not very sure about the Tibetan way of understanding this. Because according to the dictionary, when you have this word reincarnation, means something reincarnate into another segment of form and mind. Understand not? Means after this segment dies, then the consciousness come out, then they say, the one you accumulate this life on and all those, they were actually like a drop off. But this soul, that's why they believe in the mind, having the soul. Then they have this, what they call, the causal body. Causal body. Then they got various layers of mind. Then they say this one is what they call the lower mind or mundane mind. Lower mind, the mundane mind. Then this one they say is the higher mind or true mind. But these are all their various concepts. Then they also have another idea that there is a astral body. or they call it the etheric body. I don't know how to spell this one, etheric. Ah, correct, etheric body. Yeah, yeah. They say, and this one, they say, it will drop off, drop off, drop off, drop off. Then the soul transmigrate, cross over. The Buddhist teaching is different. There is no such thing as a permanent and changing entity, a soul. There is no such thing as a soul that is responsible for your seeing, the Buddha said, for your hearing, smell, taste, tactile, consciousness, and all things. Everything, according to the Buddha, is dependent, originating. That's why samsara is the existential world, perpetual cycle of birth and death, existential world, conditioned world. That's why it's dependent, originating. So when rebirth takes place, the Buddha says, it's just one moment of consciousness. That upon death, this consciousness, which is the accumulated experiences, all of your whatever life experiences, your phobia, your conditioning, your whatever complex development that you have accumulated during the lifetime, they will come out as a consciousness. They will leave this body. But this one is what they call the random of consciousness, the remain. Because this physical body cannot support it anymore. That's why the craving force all will be released. Then this one go back to one, then it come out. Yeah. But for those who do jhana and all those things, they know how to go into the jhanic state. Yeah. Then they take rebirth in the Brahma rhyme and all those things, or the formless rhyme. Then for those who know how to meditate, you have mindfulness, awareness, you will know what this thing is. Because when I was young, I came out before. That's why I know what this thing is. And I don't need the physical body to see things and hear things. Because this consciousness, the accumulation, they have the various, what they call, characteristics of life. But there is no more physical body. That's why it cannot harm you, cannot do anything to you. Then you also hear of all this, what they call real life people telling you after their parent pass away or their close friend or relative pass away, sometimes they can feel them, dream of them, or they know that he's still around because that consciousness is still around. That one you can feel them. But that one is not you anymore. It's the random of consciousness that come out. But there are many other teachings who believe that there is a soul. There is a soul. And even the Hindu believe. They say this is the Atman, the supreme self, ultimate self. So there are various types of different teachings. But when you meditate, you silence your mind, you can actually realize the true mind. When thought is silent, what happened? This one, of course, is just that astral traveling. It's just a projected thought, anasana, projected mind that goes out. This one is not important. This one, when you sleep, sometimes it come out, anasana. That's why you create a lot of dream. Then sometimes people can control this one and go astral traveling, and they can see. And I met one guy who said this astral mind can come out, and he can go and visit all the planets. Then he travel to galaxy and all those things. Then what happened is the lower mind is the noisy one, anasana. The one that chatter a lot, talk a lot, anasana, that react and do a lot of what they call mental activity, your sankara, everything. This one is with the lower mind. So this lower mind has a lot of this nonsense. That's why when you go and sleep, the conscious mind switch off. This one still active. The subconscious, the unconscious. Because thought is respond to memory. Your brain is still with a lot of, they call attachment, grieving, clinging, unfinished business. That's why you have to release all this so-called disorder of the brain in the form of dream, phobia. You know, that's why they dream a lot. But when you are a meditator, you know how to meditate, this one becomes very quiet, this one no more, the lower mind, silent. Then it could become very quiet, very still, then you touch the higher mind. The higher mind is like very little or no movement, no wave, but there is still fine thinking and movement. And that is the higher mind. But that is not your true mind yet. Your true mind is what they call the causal body. Yeah. This one, completely no mental activity. Just aware, silent. So this one is your true nature, actually. Your silent mind. Your meditative mind. But this one can only be connected when the conditioned arising mind, the mundane mind, we call it the lower mind and the higher mind, is silent, quiet. And that's why you meditate with the silent mind. So when you are with the silent mind, this one got no thought. No thought means what? No fear, no worry, no anxiety, no hindrance, nothing. No concept, no idea. That's why it can see things as they are, the direct seeing, beyond thought, beyond mind. And this is the one that can give rise to the awakening, the enlightenment, the realization and the insight. So this causal body, the reason why they use the word causal is this is the one that caused all the rest to arise. Asana. Can follow that? From the nature, everything come to be. That's why the Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things. From here, everything start. These are all conditions arising, existential. But this one can bring you back to the unconditioned. This one is also called the true mind. This is your silent mind, the direct seeing. So this is the one that can allow you to realize the cessation of form and mind, nibbana, which is the unconditioned. For this to happen, wisdom must be there. The understanding must be there. Then the mind realizes itself and cease to be. There is no more arising of even the pure awareness. This so-called pure awareness, the true mind also ceases to be. That's why Nibbana can only be realized when all this ceases to be. Yeah. But ours is not this concept. This concept is like their other religions believe. And they actually come up with all this because they couldn't explain what happened. But the Buddha can explain what happened. That's why he don't need all this. He don't need this. This so-called soul is an alien concept to the Buddha. He said there is no such thing. Everything is just dependent originating. But you need a form and mind to connect to this true nature, true mind. Without the form and mind, you cannot. So to connect the form and mind, the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the condition arising mind, that one must cease. That one must be completely quiet, silent. And then you can touch this. Yeah. That's why from this, the karmic nature condition this one out. Then the moment you touch this, the true mind, your spiritual nature, which is another nature, will connect. Spiritual nature. This one you can only inherit after you have developed the connection to the true mind. Before you connect, you cannot inherit. That's why this one is not like karmic nature. Karmic nature different. Karmic nature, the moment you are born, karmic nature. The moment the form of mind is born, you inherit everything. That's why you are born of your karmic nature, held to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are because of it. Yeah. But this one, the spiritual nature, your perfection, that cultivation that you have done before, you can never inherit until you connect, until you know how to silence your mind, until you have this ability to connect to it. You have to be completely silent, still. Then only that thing come. You have to meditate. This one you cannot understand through logic or intellect. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, you can rejoice if you want to.
Sad. Any more question?
In the Ratana Sutra, there's one say that when you are sotipana, nasopatna is a seventh. The maximum is seventh rebirth, right? So. And in this Ratana Sutra, it says that even if you are heedless, you will not. I mean, I thought you have to be heedful and mindful all the time. But it's mentioned that even if you are heedless.
What is your question? More
so
important.
So I'm asking, when you are, in this sutra, it says that maximum seven rebirth, right? For
it's not. Only that sutta or what? Because that sutta I didn't read. I don't know what it writes. But sotapan, you see, to be the first stage of sainthood, sotapana, whether it is path and fruition or just path. When you're on the path, you're already a sotapan. When you have the fruition, means the stability of the understanding, you're off the mind. After that life, you can come back to the sensual realm, maximum. Seven rebirth, anasana. Come back to the sensual realm. Doesn't mean you cannot have any more rebirth. After that, you become anagami. They call it the non-returner. Non-returner doesn't mean no more rebirth. Non-returner means you don't return to the sensual realm, anasana. You will still rebirth, have rebirth in the form realm, the pure abode, where the anagami live until they become arahant. Sakadagami is the once returner. They only return to the sensual realm one more time. That's why King Saka is a sotapan, and he liked that type of journey. He wants to stay in that state for as long as he can, because that is his choice. So even though 2,000 over years ago, to them, it's just a short time up there. But to the human time, it's 2,000 over years. So don't worry about all this. More important is the cultivation. When you realize those cultivation, you will understand a lot more. Otherwise, you ask now, it won't benefit you because you cannot understand. You are using the logical mind. Okay? No, he was trying to say, is it true that after you become sotapan, they used to tell you, you will not break the five precepts. It's correct. You will never break the five precepts. But before he become a sotapan, he is still a normal form of mind and a sana. That one still got karma. That one can still make mistakes. Even Bodhisattva, same. Before they connect, even Sakyamuni Buddha, before he actually become fully enlightened, he is still a normal form of mind, understand? That's why he suffered for 6 years of what they call austere practices to go through all those things. He got no choice because the nature hasn't come and develop the condition for him to realize the Sammasambuddha. But the moment after the Bodhi tree, when he became fully enlightened, he got no more suffering. He's incapable of violating any of that thing. That's why the enlightenment will make the form and mind different. This form and mind is very different. The form and mind, you can say, is enlightened, but it's not you, Anasana. That form and mind is Sakyamuni Buddha at that life. But that form and mind is not Sakyamuni. That's why he knew. That's why he said, you cannot see the Tathagata without seeing the Dhamma. Because that form and mind is not the real Buddha. The real Buddha is the embodiment of his wisdom and virtue and his perfection. That is the real Sammasambuddha. It's not the physical form. Not what you cling on to and hold on to. Yes.
Brother, I think I'll just try to follow up with this question.
No problem. Yeah.
Is that in the Ratana Sutta, the Buddha had mentioned that however heedless, for one who has already attained Sotapanahut, either on the path or future, he will never undergo an eighth birth, however heedless he might be.
So he will never undergo what?
Undergo an eighth birth. Eighth birth.
Yeah.
Number
eight. Which is correct.
Yeah.
Which is correct. You know why or not? The maximum seven life that you can take rebirth in the sensual life is actually the longest. Because the moment you clear that first stage of sainthood, the first three factors severed, you can say he heedless or what, he can never be heedless, understand? But the moment Sakkaya Ditti, the first factor is severed, he already knew that the form and mind is not him. That's why he can never actually fall into the woeful state. The four woeful state. Understand? That life itself. He can never break the five precepts. Then let's say the next life he come. Let's say he didn't connect. He didn't become a Sotapan. Understand? Then he can be very heedless. Understand? You follow that? Because he has maximum seven. So first one, maybe he didn't make it to second stage of sainthood, Sakadagami or Nakami. So he has to come back. Let's say he continued to be heedless for six times. The seventh time, he will sure hit Arahantship or Anagami or beyond, so that he don't have to come back. Where this is what the nature's law is, maximum seven birth. Then for second stage of sainthood, because you have attenuated the other two factors, which is ill will, essential desire, ill will. After the first three, Sakadagami only attenuate the next two. Even for them, they can only return once, because by the time they come back, they sure will finish and become at least an Anagami. Can follow that? I don't try to know is the best. Because when you are not in that mind state, you cannot understand. Because the one that go through all this, your karma, your karmic nature will take care of you, one understand? That's why all this is already in the nature's law. You will inherit one. You come, you are born of it, head to it, conditions, and you are what you are because of it. And the power of enlightenment of even the first stage of sainthood is so powerful. That's why in the Diamond Sutta it's mentioned very clearly. Even a Sotapan can't even have a thought that he is enlightened. Not to say all the other higher enlightened beings. Even a Sotapan will know that this form and mind is not him. He will never have a thought that he is enlightened. He is a Sotapan. Cannot. You still have that thought, means your Sotapanaship is a different type. Not what the Buddha had realized. According to what you think on, right according to you, enlightened according to you. It's correct, you don't have to doubt, because all this, as you train your mind, you go through, you will know. The nature's law is such, it's so powerful. especially you walk the Bodhisattva way, you will know one. After going through, they never make mistake one. That's how computer sometimes can have glitches and all those things. This one never make mistake one. Never make mistake one. Because they are nature's law. They are very powerful. And everything is already part of this nature. And it is very, very difficult to understand unless you have developed that type of cultivation. And that type of cultivation is different from the mundane understanding. The mundane mind cannot actually understand. You have to go through that cessation. Even the Sotapan, one moment only, momentary glimpse, but that is powerful enough. There is no more sakhayadity. The other three fetters, all the three fetters, they will be severed straight away, especially after the sakhayadity. Then the attachment to right and ritual, no more. You tell them, die already, you become what, your spirit will go there and all those things. He laugh at you. He know you don't understand. You're that one, the form and mind, nothing to do with him. They are conditioned arising state. Just rebirth consciousness. After that, no more. The random of consciousness is different. Oh, you say that soul take birth and what all. He laugh at you. He know you don't understand. So the Sotapan itself is already so wise, so different. Then their faith in the triple gem, unshakable, I tell you. You tell them the Buddha don't exist. There is no such thing as the Dhamma. There is no such thing as the enlightened being. He just smile. They know, without the triple gem, you cannot find this way at the hill. The triple gem is the only safe refuge. The Buddha mentioned it very clearly under Dhammapada verse. I forgot, there are three or four words together. I think 300 something, I forgot. There is no other refuge safe except the triple gem. Not even in the mountain or the temple. Or the whatever holy places. Apart from the triple gem, there is no other refuge safe. Very clearly mentioned there. Because only within the triple gem you can find the Four Noble Truths that can awaken you. That is the only refuge safe. Without the Four Noble Truths understanding, there is no refuge safe. That's why the triple gem is really powerful, it's not a joke. That's why the Buddha said you have to take refuge if you want to really cultivate his teaching. Because that one will create conditions for you to connect. Okay, late already. We better stop.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We would like to extend to you a token of appreciation. Thank you for sharing with us your Dharma knowledge.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, I offer to Brother Chua. He gave me the transport. I rejoice. Brother Chua, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu.
Thank you also, Brother Chua, for your kindness to offer and provide transportation for Brother Teo.
Yeah, very kind of him and the wife, Mimi. Almost every Friday they send me. So far, so good.
Before we end the session, just to let you know, please help yourself to some refreshments after that.
Oh, you want to transform it? Do a quick one. We just chant the Pali. Okay, Shri Amaritsa to Devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakkantu loka sasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Himina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Can you pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones?